Hello and welcome to another Giants Double Play podcast. I'm Henry Schulman, the Giants beat reporter for the Chronicle, and this is my first podcast from 2019 spring training in Scottsdale, Arizona. Today, I'm turning the tables on a guy who has interviewed me often, the very popular host of the Giants pre- and post-game shows on KNBR, Marty Lurie. He'll talk about his life before baseball, what drives his popularity, and much, much more right after this. Welcome back to Giants Double Play. I'm Henry Schulman, the Giants beat reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Talking to you from Scottsdale, Arizona on a really cool, very non-spring training-like day. And I'm here with Marty Lurie, who's the host and sole proprietor of the Talking Baseball show. You can hear Marty on weekends, pre- and post-game, on KNBR. Marty, you do like about 22 hours a day every Saturday and Sunday, isn't that right?
That's all right. It's getting there. Truthfully, I'm there, 8 a.m. Game time is at 1. I'm on the air all morning long. Then we got the game. Then I come on after John Miller wraps up, and I'm on there till about 8 o'clock at night. So it's a full day, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I want to get into a little bit of your background, but before I do that, your show is very, very popular. I mean, among some of the talk show hosts here in the Bay Area, you have one of the most loyal followings, I think. Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, Henry, because I'm on the weekends, number one. The weekend is a time that people can really enjoy baseball. People are home. They're cooking. They're cleaning. They may be driving around. They may be going on vacation. California is one of those states where the cars are paramount, driving up 5 or 580, whatever it is, and baseball is in the background. So that's number one. I think on the weekend we have a really good audience. And number two, I think I bring baseball to people. I really do. I mean, it's the love of the game. It's the story that I love to tell. I always use the old analogy of, the movie Red River, with John Wayne and the cattle drive, and that's what a baseball season is all about. And I think people like that part of baseball. Not necessarily, fire this guy or trade everybody. I think people really enjoy that part of baseball, and that's what I bring to the air.
Yeah, I mean, you talk a lot about what's going on the field.
Yeah.
And so many of the conversations now don't happen or don't cover what's going on the field. But you feel there's a demand for that sort of thing. I mean, where should this guy play? When should a guy be benched? Who do you think would be a great fit for that particular position? That's how you feel about that?
Yeah, because baseball's an interactive game. Way before the internet, we had baseball, and we had managing from the stands, and pinch hit this guy. Why didn't we do that? And that's part of baseball. It's been an interactive game, and it's something we all can relate to. Most people have a baseball story where they've seen a baseball game, and they know the flow of a baseball game. And the other thing Leonard Coppett, the beautiful, wonderful Hall of Fame baseball writer, told me a long time ago, baseball unfolds slowly. The season unfolds slowly. The game unfolds slowly. Maybe too slow these days with pace of play. But the big moments unfold slowly, and we remember them more so than any other sport. And I think that's part of what people like to hear and like to talk about.
You know, I once heard baseball season described as a 162-page book.
That's true.
Where unlike football, where you have 16 regular season games, a couple of playoff games, a couple of preseason games, or whatever. Doesn't it seem to you sometimes that in this sort of modern age of lack of patience and instantaneousness, if that's a word, people just want to jump to page 162 of the book right away. You sense that too?
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of my job is not to do that. And, they kid about, I talk people off the ledge or off the bridge. And I do. Because, look, after 30 games, you can't judge a baseball season. You can't do it after 90 games. But a season has a flow, and that's what I try to bring to the audience. The first month, you kind of try to figure out the veteran's going to be okay. In May, you may be getting your feet on the ground with the bullpen and the starting rotation. June, you kind of figure out who you are and what you need, and in July, you go get it. Then in August, the kids take over because it's so hot, you need fresh legs. And September, whenever the pros take over, that run to the finish line. So I try to bring that to the air, to the flow of a baseball season. But absolutely, come on, if you lose the first three games, that's the end of the season. Oh, goodbye, yeah. Everyone's done.
I've always told my editors, when they've asked me, I mean, I've had editors ask me after a pitcher's first two starts, you got to do a story about what's wrong with that pitcher. And I say 40 games. 40 yeah. games to me is about the first time that you really can. And it doesn't, 40 games doesn't necessarily prove anything for 162, yeah. but it's the first time you can sort of look at a trend and go, okay, maybe we should ask now what's going on.
Yeah, I think so. For me, it's June, about the middle of June. I think that's where I like to say, okay, I use the phrase, you know, I love fruit, and I say, when the peaches are on the trees, then you tell me what the team looks like.
And when the peaches are on the trees.
Right, when the peaches are on the trees and they come out in June and the best fruit comes out of the valley, then you tell me what the team looks like.
Okay.
So I don't do anything until then.
Do you like peaches? I do. I love peaches.
I love peaches. Come on. I love, absolutely. Nectarines.
Exactly. I mean, this is what a podcast is for, to find out the little information about this thing.
I love it. Kashawasi Farms has a nectarine named after me, Marty's favorite.
Oh, wow. Marty's favorite's a lot easier to spell than, what was that?
Kashawasi Farms.
Where's that?
It's in the valley, but they're in every farmer's market around Berkeley and San Francisco, and I love going there, and they named the nectarine after me.
Well, I'm going to look for that label.
Oh, believe me, in July.
Now, one of the things that sets you apart from most of the radio talk show hosts, not just in the Bay Area, but around the country, is you're always in the clubhouse. Yeah. I mean, we're here at Scottsdale Stadium. You were inside today. You had your microphone for recording. You also walked over to players. Some of the stuff we do as beat reporters, where you walked over, you had conversations with guys, stuff that you're not going to use on the air, direct quotes or whatnot. How much of your success or the attraction of your show do you think is based on the fact that you have these interactions with players and you're not just talking off the top of your head?
Yeah, I think it's very important to understand the people and to understand how the game is going, what the clubhouse is like, and to be out here every day. I mean, honestly, watching Melanson throw just to Watson yesterday warming up, I said, God, Melanson's arm looks pretty good. To watch Samardzija, I said, you know, I'm a layperson, but there was no hitch in his delivery yesterday during his bullpen. To talk to Joey Bart this morning, which I tweeted out a minute on Joey Bart catching Bumgarner. I think it's important to be here every day. Look, you guys do it. I don't know how you do the travel. I always admire you. I've told you that a million times, the travel that you go through for the year. But I think it's important for me to be at every game, every home game, every spring training game. I live in Arizona. And for me, my job has started. I'm supposed to be here every day. And that's the way I'll understand the team and the feel of the team. That's
right.
My job.
Right. And that's, you know, that's really what a good reporter does as well. Now, I've been a reporter pretty much my whole career. You have not been a journalist your whole career. Let's start out, first of all, about where you're from. You sound like a guy who should be from New York.
I'm a kid from Brooklyn.
Okay.
You know, that's it. I say Mario Alioto. I don't say Mario. You know, so
I'm Mario Alioto.
Yeah, Mario. I'm a kid from Brooklyn, and that's the baseball background I've got. I grew up during the golden era of baseball of Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, and Duke Snyder. I was there for that. Then to Miami Beach, Florida, and the Orioles trained there, and I was out of Miami Stadium, and I've got pictures with Albie Pearson and all Boog Powell and things like that when I was just a teenager. And then came to California in 1972, and I still consider myself a Californian.
Even though you live in Arizona.
Right, I live here half the year in Arizona. But I was a criminal trial defense lawyer. And I started in 1970, did it till 1995. It was my own practice.
Mostly in the Bay Area, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Did over 100 homicide cases, 3 capital cases beginning to end. And it just wore me down. 1995, I said, well, I just couldn't bounce back. And people said, well, why don't you try baseball on the radio? I said, really? And I went to a little station and tried a show, and it was like being in court again. And the red light came on, you have to start talking. And one thing a lawyer can do is talk. And it was a natural for me. Plus, I studied baseball my whole life. For me, it was my unconditional friend from age 5 to today. My father had died when I was 4 and a half. And baseball filled that void for me. So I love it. And that's what I try to bring to the airwaves.
Now, were you like me, a Dodger fan growing up?
No. I was, a Dodger fan until about 8 years old.
Okay.
And, of course, Jackie Robinson, I have his jersey hanging in my bedroom. Pee Wee Reese as well, that number 42 and number 1. I've been to Ebbets Field, and I love it. But when the Orioles came into existence, for some reason, as a kid, I was a member of the Audubon Society. I loved the bird on the hat, and I became an Oriole fan. And until I started this thing in 1996, I lived and died with the Orioles. Now, I'm in the Bay Area. I went to Giant games at Candlestick. I was there for Ron Pruitt's hit in the, you know, the pennant race and all that kind of stuff. But Dodgers to Orioles, and now I am a baseball fan, and, of course, love to see the Giants win because it's good for business.
Well, then I imagine that you had some intense personal feelings learning about the sickness and the death of Frank Robinson.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny you mentioned that. He was my favorite player growing up. Frank Robinson, I was a lawyer and I worked hard. And Frank would go 3 for 4. And they'd say, Frank, you had a great day, 3 for 4. And he'd say, I'm supposed to do that. And he was tough as nails, and he was a leader. And in my law practice, if something went well, as a criminal lawyer, it doesn't always go well. People would say, well, you did a good job. And I said, well, I'm supposed to do that. Frank Robinson was my hero.
He taught you that.
He did teach me that, and it was a bad blow.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I knew about his career. And when I'd say, well, your first home run was off Paul Minor. And he'd say, no, I don't think so. I said, Frank, it was off Paul Minor, believe me. And, of course, he told me his favorite home run, one of the most important, was the one that won the World Series in 1966 against the Dodgers, the 1-0 game in the fourth game.
There's a great picture of that home run that I've seen. I've seen it before, but I saw it recently. You can see Frank looking up at the ball, and you can see Don Drysdale kicking the dirt.
Yeah.
And they didn't get along, Frank Robinson and Don Drysdale. I think maybe partly because Frank owned him a little bit.
Yeah.
And they were both sort of hard-nosed, tough players. You don't really see, you know, we don't want to be two old guys talking about how great things were in the old days, but you just don't see players like that anymore, do you?
No, absolutely. He was a tough player. He came to play, and, you know, he was what epitomized. I mean, let's face it, you know, he just was a cut below the greats. But when he retired, you know, he was 57 hits short of 3,586 home runs. I liked talking to him. I really did. We had fun talking together. And I got to see him last September when he was here and did a very nice interview with him about growing up in Oakland and getting into Columbia, South Carolina, and what he went through, the challenges of integration, segregation.
And, you know, as you answered that question, you're hearing some clickety-clack in the background. And that's the sound of the players who are coming out for their work today at Scottsdale Stadium, and their cleats are hitting the stairs as they walk up the stairs. Sights and sounds of baseball. And I bring that up because just before FanFest, when you started your show for the year last weekend, following you on Twitter at Baseball Marty, correct?
Yes.
At Baseball Marty. I don't think there are any fans who seemed as excited, perhaps, as you, that baseball was starting. And part of that is the sights and sounds of the game, right? The sounds of these cleats hitting the stairs, the sounds of bat on ball, the sounds of the chatter and all that. Does that still give you sort of like a visceral joy?
Absolutely. It brings you back to happy times. That's what baseball's all about. We can connect the dots of your father, your family, you growing up in Los Angeles. You've got great stories of baseball people you met in Los Angeles that we've used on the air. It's bringing back those moments. So for me, spring training is bonding again with baseball. We haven't had it for 4 or 5 months. Now we're hearing the pop of the ball in the glove. We're hearing the cleats. And we're getting into the groove of it, and that's what spring training does for me. And this year, I tell you, it's going to be a story. You know, where we start in this conversation, it's going to be a story. It's going to go every single day. If it's good, it's going to be an amazing story. And if it's not good, it'll be an amazing story because Farhan is going to have to mold this team. So we're in for a story.
Yeah, and we were talking about that the other day. I've been asked this on radio all the time. You'll probably ask me the same question when you interview me for the first time this year. But in most years, you really do have a sense of what the Giants' goal is, what the nature of the team is going to be. Are you as sort of perplexed as I am as to what the direction is right now?
Oh, absolutely. They've got a lot of veterans, a core group of veterans, and we're going to have to see what they do. Samardzija, Melanson, of course, Bumgarner. I mean, we go around the whole team. There's a question mark at every single position on the team, and that's where we are in spring training. If it goes well, maybe they'll stick with these guys for a while. And if it doesn't go well, Farhan has got to deal with it.
Yeah, in journalism, I mean, I tell people all the time, people ask me, is it better when the Giants are winning? And I say, well, winning or losing doesn't seem to matter. The worst thing is boring.
Yes.
And you get the sense this is not going to be a boring year.
No. Now, I'm telling you it's going to be interesting because a lot of the veterans have a chip on their shoulder right now because they've been embarrassed for 2 years. And they're only 30, 31, 32 years old. They're not Methuselah here. You know, in the baseball world, they should still be able to play. And even though they've made a lot of money, they have to show. And there's a lot of pride. So let's see what they do.
Is there one or two of the veteran players whom you would, you know, I guess would say have had down year or years, yeah, who are still around possibly because their contracts were too big to trade? Are there any one or two of those guys that you think might have a chance to have a bounce back this year?
Well, I think Belt. I always say Belt because, he gives you part of a year, and he was almost an all-star last couple of years. 1 year he was, and he was in the runoff. So that's always there for him. So I always say this is going to be the year that he hits 30. And I think the other one is Posey. I mean, he says he's terrific. He says he feels great. Spring training for me is just get out of here healthy. But for veterans, players coming back from injuries, you want to see them look like they're playing, like they were playing, not limping around or goosing their arm and, you know, not throwing it up there. So Posey for me is the other one.
Just going back to your show, you have a lot of younger listeners, and I know that because, I see them tweeting. Again, you can follow Marty on at Baseball Marty on Twitter. He's a good follow. Do you ever have to catch yourself not just going on and on about the old days, when you know that there's so many fans that you have on the radio who just doesn't resonate with them?
Well, absolutely. You have to balance it. But you have to tell the story. I'm here to tell the story every day. I had Joey Bart on this morning. Sam Coonrod, I'm going to have him on. You must tell the story of the players who are playing and the ones coming up. I love it. I like that. But on the other hand, you want to always realize that baseball is built on tradition. And you want to educate, and I take it as my duty to educate people and to keep the flame alive of the story of baseball. So there's a balance, but you must firsthand, without a doubt, tell the story of today in today's words.
Yeah, you seem more than some other interviewers on the radio, talk show hosts, to really enjoy the interaction with listeners. Now, I mean, I think that for some radio talk show hosts, that's that's a burden more than a joy, but you seem to like that interaction.
Yeah, it's funny. I tell people, I'm honored. Seriously, I'm honored for someone to take the time to pick up the phone to tell me their story or to give me their opinion. I'm honored. Maybe it's all the years of picking juries and getting to know people and wanting to find out what and being a good listener. Mm-hmm. I'm a listener. And I let people go on and on for a little bit too long, but I'm known for letting people talk. And to tell you honestly, I'm honored that they would think to call me. I really am.
Saturday and Sunday voir dire with Marty Lurie.
That's the deal. Yeah. Really, I sound like a lawyer most of the time. You know, especially if I get into an argument.
Well, yeah, you and I have argument, and they're very friendly arguments. Yeah. But we have disagreement. I mean, we had a disagreement the other day about whether the Giants should have Gerardo Parra, and we were having that disagreement as they had already sealed the deal to bring the outfielder here. They also say that if people make fun of you, it means that they like you. One of the things that kind of comes up with your show are the Martyisms, and people just love it when you say something like, boy, that guy can hit. Yep. You know, that guy can run, and that's now called a Martyism. Yep. I mean, are you honored to have, like, an actual saying named after you?
Absolutely. 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 It's another one. It's a long season. You know, let's see where we are when the peaches are on the trees. You know, that this is the way I talk. But it's funny you say that. I'm a kid from Brooklyn. And in 2010, my first year of being on KMBR, they won. They won the World Series. I was on post games from 7 p.m. to midnight. It was crazy. And here I am in the parade. And I'm on the KMBR float, and I was on with the FP. And here's the kid from Brooklyn who saw Willie Mays at Ebbets Field and the whole thing, telling the whole world about Giants baseball. And here's a million people. And as I'm going down Market Street, they're yelling those things to me. Yeah, it's a long season. He can hit and things like that. And I said, "Wow, that
you made
that,
it.
That was
you
cool." Made it, they did a Marty Leary bingo game once.
So you got a bingo card with all your sayings on it,
and they did it for like a pregame, and they filled in. We did it live at the Public House, and when they filled in their card, we had a whole bunch of gifts, and we would give people.
Oh, that's fantastic, yeah. And. I know you're on at different times, depending on the show, but roughly, can you give us an idea, say, for home games on the weekends, what your hours are on, for home game, day games, whatever?
Sure. It's 3 hours before first pitch that I come on.
You're the marathon
man. Actually 4 hours. Mm-hmm. 4 hours before first pitch. So if it's a 1 o'clock start, Marathon Marty. Marty the Party, Bruce calls him. Boach calling. Sam Dyson started in with me about that the other day. He said, "Why do they call you Marty the Party?" I said, "I'm on a lot." He says, "Nah, it must be you grew up in the 60s. I said, "Look, I like marijuana. It's okay. I'm Kamala Harris, all right? I listen to Snoop Dogg in the 60s. All right, no, I digress. But I'm on 4 hours before first pitch, so it's 9 a.m., and I'll take it till about 12:40, doing part of the Giants pregame as well. Game's at 1 o'clock, and then, as I say, I'll come on after the wrap-up, and I'll take it for 3 hours. So it's about a 14-hour weekend of being on the air. But being at the ballpark and preparation, I'm a lawyer, so I'm preparing. And you know that when you come on with me. I'm prepared. So I'm preparing 2 hours before getting on the air. So it's a full weekend.
Yeah. Well, listen, Marty, this was fascinating. I think our readers are going to love hearing these stories and whatnot. And I look forward, again, to being on your show, as I have been over the years. We're going to have, like you said, an interesting season, and I think that your phone lines are going to light up this year.
Yeah. Well, Henry, I'll tell you this. I did 3 to 5 after the Fan Fest, and it was, of course, Harper. They never stopped. Wall-to-wall calls, 3 to 5, after because of Bryce Harper. And I've always told you this, and I'll say it on the air. You should have a show. No, I'm telling you honestly, and you've been on with us at the Public House, and whenever you come on, the fans appreciate it. You get a lot of cheers, but you have opinions, and you're not afraid to do it, and that's what a talk show is all about.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, I like the job security of newspapers more than radio. Really? We have been talking to Marty Lurie, the host of Talking Baseball, every weekend during the Giants season, and I wish you luck this year.
All right, thanks, Henry.
Thank you for listening. I'll be doing more Giants Double Play podcasts from spring training in Arizona as this most interesting season gets off the ground. Giants Double Play is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is editor-in-chief. If you like this show, please subscribe, tell a friend, or give us a review. You can support Giants Double Play and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. You can find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe. If you want to find me on Twitter, I am at Hank Shulman, or you can email me at hshulman@sfchronicle.com.